Committee of the Senate together. And if I could, in fact, I'd like to get rid of the agenda from the Senate Committee on Business and Economic Development, which is still on the counter. That's how fast we run through here. I had to tell Senator Metzger to get out of my chair a while ago. What can I say? No, I'm teasing. I'm just teasing. We're going to start today with a hearing on Senate Bill 316. And so I'm going to open a hearing on 316 and ask staff if they will give us a few words.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 316 requires state agencies to notify the advocate for minority women and emerging small businesses of awards of public contracts with a value of $5,000 or more. It directs the Department of Administrative Services to adopt rules in consultation with the advocate to establish a process and timelines for providing the notice and information required of the advocate. It applies to solicitation for bids and contract awards made on or after the effective date. We have received a no revenue impact. We have not yet received word from fiscal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I'd like Lydia and Diane, if they would, come on up and identify themselves. They're going to tell us about the intent of this bill, and essentially we're all ears here, okay? If there's anybody else that wants to sign up, I've only got one other person signed up, but I'm sure that others could if they wish to do so, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, thank
Lydia,
you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Shields and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lydia Muñiz. I am the governor's advocate for minority, women, and emerging small businesses. And I support the passage of this bill, but we will be talking about a proposed amendment that we'd like to share with you today. Current statute, or rather, let me back up just a little bit. Statutory authority for the advocate's office, my position, and the responsibilities of my office are found under ORS 200.025 as well as ORS 200.035, the subject of this particular bill today. And in practical terms, what that means is that ORS 200.035 requires state agencies to notify my office anytime they have a bid request or solicitation in excess of $5,000. The intent of the current statute is to make information about the state's book of business more accessible to the businesses that I work with, and those are certified firms, minority-owned, women-owned, and emerging small businesses, to be able to provide information to those businesses and through that mechanism to start seeing some contract awards and some business relationships being created with these firms. There currently is no statewide comprehensive tracking mechanism in place that gives us the information on the award side. So we have the notification piece, but we don't have the contract award. Therefore, we really have no opportunity to measure our success as a state to see how we're doing or to focus specific efforts on improving our efforts with those businesses. The issue that is addressed by this bill, then, is information on contract awards. And the amendment to the current statute as it exists right now would provide the advocate and all of state government the much-needed data on the levels of utilization by the state pertaining to small businesses in state contracting. And I just want to point out and acknowledge, I think, Senator Dukes and Gordley here. It's because this bill is really a result of some interim work that Senator Dukes did with stakeholders over a period of about 6 months, and really to start looking at this issue and addressing the question of how the state is doing in contracting with certified businesses. And, of course, Senator Gordley has always been an advocate of the utilization of certified firms in state contracting, and, of course, has also been very instrumental in introducing this bill, so I want to acknowledge them. The potential problem for non-DAS agencies, and a part of the amendment that we'd like to propose to you today, as mentioned earlier, I do support the bill, but I've become aware that the current version may create problems for state agencies that fall outside of the Department of Administrative Services authority. And I have had communications with Senator Gordley, and she too would be supportive of an amendment. And so working closely with the Department of Administrative Services, who I'm sharing the presentation with here, Diane will go over the proposed amendment language, but we believe that it is a simple amendment that is needed and support an amended version of Senate Bill 316. But the basic difference between the bills would be that the proposed amended version, those agencies that fall under the umbrella of the Department of Administrative Services would report through a process that we've identified together using the state's electronic purchasing system called the Oregon Procurement Information Network. And we've worked on that together, and we think that'll work just fine for those agencies that do fall under the umbrella of the Department of Administrative Services. For those that do not fall under Department of Administrative Services authority, such as higher education, Secretary of State, the Judicial Department, and such other agencies, what we would like is to have the opportunity to work directly with those agencies and establish a process and timelines directly with them on how they would provide this information to my office. So we would still be collecting it, but we'll work directly with them on how the timelines and the process would be. With that, I would encourage your support of Senate Bill 316 with amendments, and thank you very much.
And a quick question. You said you would work with them in terms of timelines, higher ed and some others that you were talking about.
Correct.
How does that reflect itself in the statute? Or would that be in the amended part? Or
the current statute, Senator Shields and members of the committee, what it says is that state agencies shall provide timely notification. And we have gone through the administrative rule process and identified what timely means. So in working with those particular state agencies, okay, we would go through that process as well and identify what that means to them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good. Diane?
Senator Shields, members of the committee, I'm Diane Lancaster. I'm the State Chief Procurement Officer for the Department of Administrative Services. Pleased to be here today to support this bill. As Lydia has said, we've covered pretty much the points and supports in our written testimony that you have in front of you. We are very pleased with this work. Lydia, at the Advocate's Office, my office, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, stakeholder groups have come together to figure out how to program our new information system that will go live March 1st to accommodate this reporting feature. So everything has been put into place to accommodate the requirements of this bill. So I am very hopeful that there will be no fiscal impact that shows up on this one. We think the bill will give us, the Department of Administrative Services and all state agencies, the ability to gather and get some reports that give us some meaningful information. And as many of you know, we have been hamstrung for years in our inability to capture meaningful information on how much business of the state's book of business is going to minority women and emerging small firms who are certified. So we're excited about the prospect of being able to capture this information and put it to good use. We have attached to the written testimony is a form of a dash one proposed amendment. We've taken a stab at going ahead and highlighting the language change. This was inadvertent. It was not intended to scoop, if you will, state agencies into our DAS process, but by making these corrections, we think we've clearly stated that they will then work with the Advocate's Office separately from us. We'll cover our agencies, and then, of course, those agencies can work with her to set up the process. With that, I would invite any questions you have.
We'll drop this amendment after Judith has looked over it to make sure that nothing obviously occurs.
Right.
We'll drop that as soon as possible.
Thank you, Senator.
Are there questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Verger.
Yes, you said you hoped that there would not be a fiscal, so that I'm presuming by that you don't expect to have to add staff, you don't have to do all kinds of reprogramming and all of this kind of thing.
Senator Shields, Senator Verger, you're absolutely right, Senator. That's why I feel this is an easy bill for the department to support. We have had a window of opportunity, ma'am, as we have rebuilt a 15-year-old legacy system to capture that window of opportunity and work with Lydia to incorporate the programming needed into that project. So it's already done. And so there is no further cost or FTE direct resources that will be required on our part to put this into play.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes, Senator Starr.
Thank you, and I apologize for stepping out or being late to the hearing, but I appreciate the written testimony and the opportunity to answer a question. And the question is on the fiscal. While DAS doesn't anticipate a fiscal, if I read this right, you're asking state agencies to do something. Is it something that state agencies are already doing that wouldn't add any additional effort to their part, or could we anticipate other state agencies coming and say, well, we have, 1,000 of these contracts, this will require us to take an extra step?
Senator Shields, Senator Starr, it's a very good question. As far as the DAS agencies are concerned, what we are trying to build with the new Oregon Procurement Information Network, and this is a phased development, and we are rolling out phase one in March, we are trying to build what is called an end-to-end electronic procurement system for those agencies who work with DAS. They are all going to be, effective March 1, reporting awards over $5,000 into this system anyway. So we have gone ahead and put those data fields, if you will, into mm-hmm. the system that show whether a firm who gets an award is a certified firm and allows us to put their number in and to go over by a hot link to the Department of Consumer and Business Services database to double-check that kind of feature. So the burden on state agencies is light. I can't speak for the university system or state agencies who are not subject to our authority. However, I will say that those folks are welcome to use the Oregon Procurement Information Network. Many of them make extensive use of it now, and the reporting system is open and available to them if they choose to use that. So we're hoping that they might find it an easy way to participate and cooperate in this effort.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I apologize if this was questions that were answered in the testimony, but perhaps a list of the DAS agencies, that's a new way of looking at agencies, I guess. So if a list of which ones are in, or if the list are shorter, the name the ones that are out, then that would be helpful just for the record.
Yeah, they were mentioned, but you can get him the information.
We'll be happy to do that, Senator.
Thank you.
Do you think this information, once it becomes available, I know I'm speculating, I'm asking a speculative question, and I do this every once in a while to get people nervous, I suppose. Do you think this information, once it becomes available, will become somewhat embarrassing to the state? And is the purpose maybe to embarrass us into doing things better, more fairly?
Well, thank you for the question, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I think the question over the years, the legislature has requested that information of me from session to session, and I've not been able to provide accurate data because we don't have a statewide collection site. So we are just not aware of how we're doing. I think that if you ask the folks that are on the certified firms list and are actively looking for these opportunities, they would probably say to you, no, the state doesn't have a very good record. But we have no way of knowing whether we do or don't.
So you've got some anecdotal information, but what you really need is...
Mm-hmm. We need some strong data.
Yeah,
yes.
Strong data to back it up. Are there any other questions? Well, I think you've got a very fine idea. I appreciate Senator Gordley coming earlier and introducing you. Thank you very much. We do, and I'll let you step back. We do have Sandra Bishop, who's signed up to testify on the bill, and I don't think there's anybody else that's signed up to testify on the bill, but we'll take yours for a moment, Sandra. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
Fields,
members of the committee. My name is Sandra Bishop. I represent the Fair Competition Alliance. The Fair Competition Alliance is a group of businesses, both small and large, and also labor unions are also members of this coalition. We are interested in one public contracting issue that has to do with the fact that in the late 70s there was a law passed in Oregon which mandates that any public contract that's offered for award goes without competitive bid to a nonprofit if that nonprofit is using the disabled or employing the disabled. So I'm just giving you this background to show you the perspective that we have on this. And I'm here today to support Senate Bill 316. This is one very good start at getting the kind of data that we've been asking for 6 or 7 years now out of the system of DAS, where there are a lot of public contracts out there, and it would be very beneficial to know where they're going. So generally when I testify, I don't ask questions, but I am compelled today to ask for clarification, if the committee can get clarification on one question, and that is whether or not the contracts that are mandated to go to the nonprofits go to the nonprofits before notification would go to the minority and women and small emerging businesses, or whether that those contracts will also show up in that notification. It's a bit of does this labor trump that labor, and does the small emerging business contracts trump prison labor, for instance. So it's kind of the hierarchy. So I think it would be very beneficial to know and hopefully be able to capture these mandates, the contracts that are mandated to go to the nonprofits, if there's any way that those can be captured in here, it would serve the public well. There are a lot of small businesses that are actually going out of business because they can no longer compete because of those unfair practices of mandating the contracts go to the nonprofits. In some cases, the nonprofits are not only capturing state and public contracts, but they're also capturing market share of private contracts using it as kind of a way to subsidize their operations. So I do want to really wholeheartedly support this bill, and it seems like one more step in the direction of transparency in the public contracting that's happening in Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you, and I'll ask that you follow up with Judith to articulate your question a little more carefully so that we can follow up on it.
Sure, I can give that to her in writing.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
There's an Andre Both who has asked if he could testify on the bill as well. Welcome to our committee. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Chair, members, my name's Andre Baugh, and I'm with Group AGB. I'm a company that provides diversity services and project management services to government agencies and to private companies. Senate Bill 316 is a significant step in bringing visibility and accountability to the procurement of goods and services for women and minorities, a question you had asked, whether or not you're doing good or not. I think just the visibility, it brings a tool by which the legislature and the citizens can then make informed decisions on how to really nurture and grow a significant and vital part of Oregon's economy, women and minority businesses. That's the fastest growing segment. And how do you nurture and grow that with Oregon dollars to those Oregon companies? And as you look at a tool, here's a reporting tool that is just saying, where are we spending our money, and how, if we're going to make constructive changes in the future, how do you make those changes? And you want to do that based on solid data collection. And, anecdotal information is always good, but when you have solid data, you can make better and more economic decisions. Additionally, the Advocate for Women and Minorities is able to provide, if they can provide services, where those services are needed in those specific segments. So again, it provides you better tools for the people that are providing services to direct companies to where there's opportunities or where there's needed help. With that, I support the bill, and if you have any questions, I'll answer them.
Are there any questions of this witness? Thank you, Andre, coming. I appreciate your testimony.
Thanks.
It seems as if we have an amendment that we're going to be working on. We've got a copy of that, and we'll do it as quickly as we can and bring this back shortly. With that, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 316. And we were thinking of having a short hearing on Senate Bill 387, This will just be a brief hearing. And I'm going to ask staff first if they'll come forward, or staff if she'll make a comment, and then we'll have Susan Wilson come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 387 expands the duties of the Employee Suggestion Awards Commission. It requires the governor to appoint the chairperson of the commission and the Senate to confirm member appointments. I will let the members know that the sponsor of this measure, our own Vice Chair Senator George, did ask me to put in an amendment request for him, which I have done, to delete the Senate confirmation piece in the bill. And we have received a no revenue impact on the original measure, and we're still waiting to hear from fiscal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Susan, can you come and speak to this bill for a moment?
I have some written testimony, but I'll go ahead and give it to you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Wilson. I am administrator of the Human Resource Services Division in the Department of Administrative Services. The Employee Suggestion Program is part of our division, and we have staff who administer that program currently. What we ought to have here for you today, as you take a look at these bills, we wanted to give you an idea of what the current program is. So you're getting a packet of information that shows you the current process associated with the suggestion program as it exists. In case you had any questions about that, I've also given to your staff testimony regarding both 387 and 388, which both address the employee suggestion program. Since you're looking specifically at 387, or Mr. Chair, do you want any information or a walkthrough on the current program?
Do a quick walkthrough of the current program. That's part of why I opened a hearing on 387, and we will talk about 388 in a few moments, so if you want to toss in your stuff on that,
okay.
Maybe I have to change and open a hearing on both to do that. Go ahead.
Okay.
Just go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The packet that you have in front of you that we just gave you shows you actually a graphic of the suggestion process as it currently exists. We also have in there one of the applications for employees wishing to make suggestions and the forms for evaluating and verifying the savings from the suggestions. We've given you the policies of the commission, the statute, and some examples of some of the suggestions that have received awards, and then the last piece is a chart showing you the suggestion awards program savings since 1981. So in basic terms, what we have here is a program that allows state employees to submit a suggestion for an efficiency in state government, a cost savings. Those are evaluated by the agencies, and there is a commission that then reviews the recommendations that come through. An employee under that program can receive a cash award or a non-cash award depending on the savings, if it's actual dollar savings, if it's a cost avoidance, and those the commission determines the cash awards in those cases. The commission meets about every 2 months and works through those programs. To give you an idea on the number of suggestions that we get, in the 99-01 biennium, we received 428 suggestions. In the 01-03 biennium, 316. And so far this biennium, we've received 226. About 10% of those, 10 to 20% may be something that we actually do adopt, and there may be some award for the employee in that case. Senate Bill 387 changes the law, and I know that you are drafting an amendment. It did require, I believe, that they needed consent confirmation, but that is something that you're taking out. Currently in the statute, it says that the support staff will be appointed by the director of DAS. This bill, 387, removes any reference to hiring or appointment of staff, so it takes out the staffing element, we currently have a 0.5 FTE who is responsible for administering and managing this program. The bill requires that a secretary be elected from among the commission members, and the commission members serve without pay. So that raises concerns for us about the actual administration and management of the program as it's laid out in Senate Bill 387. The chair is currently elected from among the members of the commission. The bill changes that so that the governor appoints the chair. It also expands the duties of the commission to promote a statewide employee suggestion program to be more assertive in that, and to work with public employers to promote effectiveness, efficiency, and economy. The public employers there are defined under 243.650, which opens that up to local governments and other government entities, school districts, which could again expand the scope of the program and potentially the staffing impact on trying to administer the programs and take these suggestions through. Those are the main concerns that we have in relation to Senate Bill 387 in terms of how it relates to the current program.
I'm going to ask you a completely kind of subjective question here.
Yes.
Are you more comfortable with what you now have or with what you see suggested in 387?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently I think we are comfortable with the ability that we have to staff the program and manage the program. The concerns that we see in 387 really don't give us a mechanism to do that, and it's not clear how it would be done.
Okay. Are there other questions from committee members?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd just make a comment. I think if local government wants to have an employee suggestion program, they could have one. I mean, I don't know. This seems like a nice little program to me. Everybody is, it's manageable. People are getting awards. It's not broken. I think that when you look at the expansion and all that it's going to include, that's a huge number of people all making suggestions and maybe not particularly appropriate to that particular government. So I don't know. I have a hard time in being enthusiastic about that.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
Ditto.
Okay.
And I'm at least... The Senator George was thinking about taking the governor's or the Senate confirmation out of this because I've got a bill to streamline the executive appointment process and get rid of some of these things that we put through the Senate process. I don't see why the governor should be involved in appointing the chair of the group. I mean, it just, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Senator Starter, do you have any questions? You're the only one that signed up on 387, so I'm going to close the hearing on 387 and open a hearing on 388. Did you have some comments on 388 real quick?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I can do, and I have given you some written testimony, is simply outline what the bill does in relationship to the current program that we already talked about. What this does is change it from an employee suggestion program to what's called the Oregon Suggestion Awards Program, and it allows anyone to submit suggestions and receive cash awards. So it's not simply an employee suggestion program, and it's not a citizen of Oregon program. It opens it up to anyone who would like to make suggestions. Again, some of the issues that we have surrounding this relate to staffing in terms of we would anticipate a large number of suggestions potentially coming in if it's opened up broadly, and that could indeed have a fiscal impact then. We also, there are some specific elements of the bill. For example, currently the commission has adopted rules where there is a cap on the amount of the awards. The current law has capped it at $5,000. The bill as it's written provides a cash award of 10%, which we know would have a fiscal impact indeterminate, obviously, but it would have a fiscal impact on that. The bill does not provide any provisions for funding, how the money would be gathered, who would gather it. It leaves it, again, in the hands of an Oregon Suggestion Awards Commission and for distribution of that funding. So those are the main concerns. There are also concerns that are addressed in the bill, making it an unlawful employment practice for any public employer to prohibit an employee from making a suggestion. I did a granted informal survey of the agencies and human resource directors to see if any complaints have ever been received regarding people not being allowed to make suggestions. And really, even anecdotally, we didn't have any information that indicates that this was a problem that people were experiencing.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to ask both Mary Botkin and Amy Claire to come up and be ready to ask my other questions.
I just had a very quick question, Ms. Wilson. The 10% could be a significant sum. What is the largest amount of money the state has paid from an employee suggestion, just to help us understand what that 10% would mean?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the last chart in the packet that you have, you'll see that in the 87-89 biennium.
Somebody had a really good idea, though.
Somebody had a really good idea. It had to do with cold patching for highways, and that saved over $5 million. And I think that person got $10,000.
As opposed to under this rule, they would have got $500,000.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just thought we'd like to know that.
It's just a little relevant fact in a state that's short of money. Welcome to our humble podium.
Thank you.
Which one of you wants to hold forth first?
Amy's the nice one. She should go first.
Oh, okay.
I have to be nice now that I work for the state. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Claire, and I'm the administrator of the Civil Rights Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And this testimony is signed by Commissioner Gardner, so I appreciate you allowing me to testify in his behalf. We appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony on Senate Bill 388. Boley, through its Civil Rights Division, does enforce the Public Employee Whistleblower Law, which is amended in Section 3 of Senate Bill 388. We have no substantive objection to the bill as written, but we do have a number of concerns and suggestions for the committee to consider. First, we'd like to note for the record that the agency understands that the changes on page 2, lines 17 through 18, and the corresponding changes on line 36 are not intended to be substantive in nature. We understand these sections were revised by legislative counsel merely to clean up the structure of the statutory provision. At first, we thought they were eliminating a protection, but we realized they were just doing really housekeeping. Second, we agree with the sponsors of the bill that the current law would not necessarily protect individuals who are making suggestions to improve the effectiveness or efficiency of state programs. The law is currently focused on disclosure of any information that the employee reasonably believes is evidence of a violation of any federal, state, or local law, or mismanagement, gross waste of funds, or abuse of authority, or substantial and specific danger to public health and safety. This is materially different from an employee making a suggestion to improve a program's efficiency or effectiveness, since the suggestion may not contain any implication that the current program is being mismanaged. Third, we seek clarification on whether the new language on lines 29 through 31 of page 2 is intended to apply only to state employees, I think this was alluded to before, who make suggestions under the program. That's not entirely clear from the language as drafted, given that the statutory section 659A203 applies to all public employers. We seek clarification on this point, as it may well add to the number of potential employees filing a complaint with Boley under this new law. Notably, many local governments do get state funds to run programs, and their employees may have suggestions on how to improve those programs. Again, we learned the numbers that were just provided to you, so I won't repeat those, but we know that they're substantial. And even if 10% of these employees were to file a complaint, this would increase both the number of inquiries to the division that we would need to respond to, as well as to potentially add 30 to 40 cases per biennium to our caseload. That may not sound like a large number of complaints, but the current intake and investigator caseload in the Civil Rights Division is extremely high already, and we've got an attachment behind that shows how we've lost staff and how workload has gone up. This, unfortunately, is due to large part by the agency's prior practice of agreeing to take on new enforcement activities without receiving any additional resources or staff to perform these duties. In addition, it's still possible that the agency may have to reduce the number of staff for that division in the 05-07 biennium, given our budget situation. As such, we'd like the committee to consider an amendment that Senator George mentioned to the agency yesterday. He indicated his willingness to consider an amendment to provide some of the savings from the suggestions be directed to cover the actual cost of investigating these complaints. And it appears that this type of provision could be added to ORS 182-360, which addresses the administration of the program. We'd be happy to work with the committee and the senator on this amendment. And again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Are there any questions? If not, Mary, it's your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botka. I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And, you know, actually, I had fewer problems with this bill when I read it than when I listened to Sue Wilson testify on it. And I will give Senator George credit for the fact that he did attempt to meet with us and sort of walk us through what he was trying to accomplish. And I think that what I've heard today is significantly different than what the good senator indicated to me that he was trying to accomplish. And I'm going to assume that was not by design, but rather just simply in drafting errors. Because the way that Senator George explained it to us, it made a lot of sense. And that is, he wants to be able to protect employees who come forward with reports of ways to save money from any kind of retribution on behalf of their employer. We have gone through a couple of very extensive reorganizations through the budget process with one of our agencies, the Department of Corrections, I think it was two sessions ago, where we literally made the Department of Corrections rewrite their entire budget and examined every position for the potential, with the potential in mind that person may actually be eliminated. And as a result, we were able to identify enough savings in the budget to purchase backyard time for inmates. And some, we purchased back some program time for the inmates as well, which saved some of the jobs of our program staff, but also made for a better environment for everybody to work in, and it made it better for the inmates to do their time. We did not give people bonus rounds or bonus checks at the end of the month for saving money. Instead, we put the money right back into the budget and used it on programs and areas that we thought were important, and we did it with the cooperation of the department. I always worry when we give people money. I think if we identify savings, it should go back into the program areas or, as Amy has suggested, go back into enforcement and into those areas that protect the employees where there may be retribution taken against them for making suggestions. I would suggest that we separate the two issues. Because I do think there's two issues here. There's one that says, you know, here are some efficiencies we can do. The other one is, here's waste, fraud, and abuse. And I think waste, fraud, and abuse is a whole different subject than efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And waste, fraud, and abuse sort of, sort of indicates that somebody's doing something either illegal, immoral, or at least lacking in any kind of ethical behavior, where efficiencies are just simply, I've got a better way to do it. And I really would feel more comfortable if we sort of separated those two issues and handled them differently. Because I do think efficiencies should be identified. We should encourage our members and our employees to identify those efficiencies. And what we did with the Department of Corrections was we sat down with the department and said, this is what we want the money spent on. And we were able, through sort of a civilized process of working through the system with the department, to jointly agree that we wanted yard time back. We wanted, you know, there were things we wanted to buy back. And by doing that, The department has a better department today. The inmates have a better environment to do their time in. And program staff and some other people were able to keep their jobs. And I think that that's really sort of what our goal was. Waste, fraud, and abuse, by its very nature, tends to raise a specter that's a little uglier.
Mm-hmm.
And has a potential of some retribution that could be dangerous for everybody involved. And so I do think Bowley needs to be involved in those issues. I don't think they need to be involved in the other issues. I do think that there is a need to protect people who report that kind of activity. And if we're identifying things that result in money, then I think we do need to have civil rights investigators there to assure that the employee is being protected along the way. I think the only other thing that occurred to me is, as I was sitting there and I was listening to Sue talk, I made a note and said, bounty hunters at large. Yeah. And I thought, you know, if Fred Myers would give me 10 minutes with their top board, I could tell them 25 ways to save money at my Southeast Portland Fred Meyer store every week.
Been there.
Been there, done that. You know? I don't need somebody from Ohio flying into Oregon and telling us how to do business here, sort of while they're here on vacation. You know? Oh, I know. Let's run the parks like this instead. You know, I think that there is sort of an interest in keeping our ideas sort of Oregonized, for a better, for the lack of a better term.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
Oregonized.
Okay. You know? Well, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm not sure that they know how. I mean,
yeah.
What's an appropriate program or an environment for somebody in downtown Manhattan may not be acceptable to somebody in downtown Portland.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm sure that there are people who could come in and tell us how to do our park blocks better. We should probably ought to get rid of all those homeless people out of the park blocks. And, oh, I don't know, maybe we could put them someplace like Disney Village. But seriously, I mean, you know,
right.
I mean, I just think that we ought to, like, not open it to the world at large. And I certainly don't want somebody from another country telling us how to do it either. You know, and there really is no limitation to the suit, so adequately pointed out that there's just simply no limitations about who could sort of weigh in here.
I appreciate both of your testimony. I don't know that there's any questions. Do you have a question? Yes.
Just one. Seems like there's been some discussion about the 10% of the savings going to the identifier of the savings. Is it a percentage? Just a question. Is it that's a problem, or is the flat percentage or flat rate better? It seems to me that this is about saving money. We're actually, you know, if this program is expanded and you know, there's additional savings identified, benefits whatever agency that savings is in potentially in the state's general fund budget overall. And if you have somebody that was creative and innovative and created a better mousetrap, was able to demonstrate why it would, you know, save money to do something a different way, what's there to lose to benefit that person financially? And but you're also, obviously, there's 90% left that can be spent on whatever you get spent on.
I sort of abandoned, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I sort of abandoned my opposition to people getting a check in the mail last session. It just simply because, you know, I think you can argue either side. I felt pretty strongly that with the kinds of budget cuts that the state was going through, that we were better off plowing that money back in to programs than we were sort of giving somebody a check. I quite frankly don't necessarily care about them getting a check as much as I care about us encouraging people who work for us within state government or local governments from having some ownership and really being able to say there's a better way to do this. And, you know, we all hear all of the pundits out there talking about the Goldsmith programs back in the Northeast.
Indianapolis.
Yeah. And, you know, the bottom line was, you know, what they don't talk about is the fact that Goldsmith fired all the management team and promoted the workers, because the workers actually came up with ideas about how to do things better, and this had to do with snow removal, where they actually said, well, if you put stuff here, we could do it better. The way it is now, we have to drive across town. And the management team, when he met with them, blamed the workers for not working harder. And so he fired the managers and kept the workers. You know, I think that there's value in listening to frontline workers when they have ideas about how to do things better. But I think, you know, if it results in savings, then let the workforce decide what they want to do. I mean, in our case with the Department of Corrections, our people wanted to buy back positions and programs. That's what they wanted to do, because they saw that as a way to make their working environment better. And, you know, as I said, I abandoned my sort of opposition to the 10% cash refunds. But, you know, I feel obligated to at least hold on to a little bit of my opposition and say, well, it's taxpayer money. Well, I just put it back into the programs that the taxpayers think they're paying for.
But it does fit an old concept in democracy of the common good that we seem to have forgotten.
Wise be hanging history. On to it, as do you, Senator.
I appreciate your question. I don't think that we have a whole lot more in front of the committee today. We did schedule this for Senator George. It's unfortunate that his illness has returned or has come back. He's up and down and in and out of the Senate these days. So thank you very much for your time.
And I do feel somewhat obligated to go back to the senator and talk to him again. Okay. Because, you know, until I heard the testimony today, I really had no opposition to this bill at all. Now I do have a few concerns, but I feel confident that he was operating in good faith and that we can work our way through this.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to adjourn the Senate Committee on General Government. Thank you. Okay. I'm out.